Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Very good evening to you, Christine. And thank you so much for making time for us right here on Point of View's Impact. So basically, what we do here is to speak to people who are making a real significant impact in our society. Some are well known, some are not, but we chose you, Christine, so welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm honored.
You are absolutely welcome. You're a UNICEF representative here in South Africa. And having looked at your CV, you've got quite a long history with the UN. You could have worked anywhere in the world or in anywhere for that matter, in any sector, marine and air law. When I look at your CV, that means, you know, your options were quite plentiful. Why would you have decided to go the UN route?
So I studied political science and international relations at university. And as you noticed, I had also gone for a master's degree in maritime and air law. So when I came back home to Rwanda, I had the option of either going into government or the UN, or the private sector with the master's degree in maritime and air law. So I approached all of those for, you know, job opportunities. And the first one to respond to me positively with an opportunity, even though it was a volunteer position, I was not going to be paid at first, was the UN. And that's how the whole journey started, and I never left.
I mean, you say it, you know, as you're saying, you know, you took the first opportunity that came your way. But you obviously had an interest in international relations, in politics. And maybe talk to us about that journey.
Right. So, yes, I did have, of course, a keen interest in international relations, in international development. I came back to Rwanda. As I said, I studied in Belgium, so I did my university in Brussels, and it was a deliberate choice of mine to go back home, because I thought, you know, we need to build the continent. We need to build the countries where we come from, especially mine, which is not so, you know, wealthy and well-doing country, even though at that time we hadn't gone through the trauma of the genocide. But still, you know, we were and still are a poor developing country. And so for me to join the UN and be in a position where I could feel from the start that I'm contributing to building something was a true calling. And so I guess things were well aligned in terms of them being the first to respond positively to my job inquiries.
And your initial interest in politics, as you're saying, that was before genocide in Rwanda. What sparked it?
The interest in politics? Perhaps first and foremost, the family environment. I'm the daughter of a former diplomat. My dad is no longer with us anymore, but he was a diplomat, and then became a when he went back home, he worked in government. And I was very close to my dad, and very sort of interested in the kinds of analysis, the kinds of take that he had on society and the course of things, the kinds of principles he would share with us as children. So I was shaped by that, you know, by his vision, by his own work, by his involvement in the development of the country. So it was sort of, for me, a natural pathway, being inspired by him and wanting to follow his footsteps.
When you started delving into the work of the UN, were you surprised by just how desperate, I think, people are, just how desperate situations are for children, for women and so on, because you didn't necessarily start at UNICEF. But obviously, when you get into an institution like the UN, the data is right there for you to see at cold face what really the situation is like. Were you surprised?
I wouldn't say that I was surprised, but it's almost as if you have constant wake-up calls and reminders that, you know, it's important for you to contribute. It's important for you to give back. Because at the end of the day, you know, I was from the start almost, by getting a job with the UN, I became somehow privileged, even though I was oftentimes in touch with very challenging and difficult situations that people were going through. So not surprised, because you sort of understand or accept that, you know, we don't live in an equal or just world. We aspire for that to happen one day, but you want to constantly be aware that you need to do something to fix the inequities, the inequalities, the challenges that your fellow citizens, human beings, men, women, girls, boys go through.
You've, as South Africa, UNICEF South Africa, you've just released a 2024 situation analysis of children and adolescents in SA. And this is in the context of other reports that are released, around the world. We don't even have to look at the report. We have to look at what's happening in Gaza. You have to look at many, many other conflict areas and see just how children are, in a way, are an afterthought. Even in developed countries. Your thoughts on why is it that it's so easy to ignore a future generation, so to speak?
Yeah, I don't know how to explain it. It's mind-boggling. I was at an event on Monday, an event co-organized by the United Nations, it was at Freedom Park, and it was a solidarity event with the people of Palestine. And you can't help but think that it should be so natural for people to protect children. It should be so obvious that, you know, you, even if you have a war, even if you engage in in intense politics, you would safeguard and keep your children and other children safe. But I have to say it's just beyond comprehension why they wouldn't say, you know, let's stop the war so that kids can be protected, that they can go back to school, that, you know, they can have access to health care, to water, I mean, basic things. Why would you want to continue something that clearly stands in the way of that happening and actually makes children die? You basically contribute to killing them. I don't know how to explain that.
You know, one of the things that come out of your report is about 23%. I mean, that's a very, very scary number. The number of children who in South Africa are sort of able to have, or is this, are these the children that are food insecure? That's a staggering number when you look at the fact that, you know, the category of what it means to be food insecure means that you really, really, really must be struggling to find something that sustains you as a child, that it makes it possible for you to retain information, to grow properly physiologically, and all of that.
Yes, it's in the context of South Africa, it's even more, I have to say, unacceptable. If you are in a country where, you know, there is war, there is drought, I mean, it's still unacceptable, but you can understand that the circumstances are such that families, you know, cannot provide the necessary food, both in quantity and quality, to a child. But in our context here in South Africa, it's really a matter of making the systems, the beautiful systems that the country has, work for all. Because we are in a country where, you know, there's plentiful on one side, and then, you know, on in other quarters, children who are food poor, who are stunted, and sometimes it leads to severe acute malnutrition and death. And we know, you know, what needs to be done for families to have livelihoods so that they can provide for their children. So we really need to up our game in terms of what we do, how we do it, how we make sure that we go from small interventions, limited interventions, demonstrations, to, you know, making sure that it's applied across the country, so that all children can have the access to the food that they need, the affordable food, the nutritious food that they need to grow and to strive.
You know, your report is quite extensive, and a lot of detail shows us, you know, in so many ways we do not protect the rights of children. I'm struck by how everybody, in a way, in different circles, is releasing what looks like identical studies, just pointing to the fact that we really are not moving the needle. When you listen to government and look at government's policies, we're all on the same page. We want to achieve the same thing. 30 years after democracy, and all the efforts and all the tools that are in place, policy, the grants that are in place, a lot of organizations also trying to do their bit. Why is it that it doesn't seem like all these efforts are making a difference in a real meaningful way?
I wouldn't be so negative or pessimistic. So we are making a difference. It's just that we're saying the pace at which we're, you know, making the progress is not right. You know, we're not doing right to the children who are left out if we don't make sure that, you know, things happen at scale, fast, and in a qualitative manner. So in South Africa, we came from a very low point. A lot of progress has been made in terms of, you know, access to health care for children, access to education. But we wanted to be faster, and we're actually working with partners both in government, including in the presidency, where there is a team that's working on what they're calling a national strategy for accelerated action for children, so that we do look at ways whereby if you work on catalytic interventions, there will be a multiplier effect that makes it so that we get the the proven solutions that we have to the highest numbers possible of children in the country. So I think also sometimes what happens with countries where there is good reporting, there is monitoring that works, you sometimes have the sense that, you know, things are all negative and they're not working. But it's just that we're talking about it. We're saying, you know, let's make sure that we continue to challenge ourselves. We remain on our toes, and we make sure that we reach all the children that deserve to be well fed, that deserve access to health services that are available, quality education, water and sanitation, so that they can, so that we can together realize what are their rights in this country.
So, I mean, we forget sometimes that actually what UNICEF does is partly what a country should be able to do itself. So we really are honoring you, because the work that you do is not something that we have to get. We don't have to have you here to commit yourself to you know, supporting our children and so on. So thank you so much for what you do and your team, Christine. And yes, sometimes I don't think, you know, we speak of you and the work that you do a lot, but it is appreciated, and many, many quarters do recognize it. So thank you again. And thank you for making
time
for us.
It's an honor. Yes, it's an honor. It's a privilege. And it's a global mandate. We actually do not just work in places where you would, you know, qualify either the government or the society or community as not being able to care for their children. UNICEF has a universal mandate. We want to be everywhere where there is a possibility that even one child is left out of the benefits of what society has to offer nowadays. So it's an honor and a privilege to also be here in South Africa, working alongside, you know, very dedicated, committed people who are in the children's sector.
Christine Muhigana, thank you so much. She is a UNICEF representative here in South Africa, and that's our Impact on Point of View.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.